Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest on this edition of the program is Ambassador Mark Lagon. He's president of Freedom House, the first human rights organization ever established in the United States. And we're coming to you from Freedom House headquarters in Washington, D.C. Founded in 1941 with the support of First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, Freedom House has a legacy of defending democracy, press liberties, and basic human dignity around the globe. Prior to taking the helm at Freedom House, Mark Lagon was chair for global politics and security at Georgetown University and senior fellow for human rights at the Council on Foreign Relations. Previously, he was executive director of the leading anti-human trafficking nonprofit, Polaris. He earlier served at the State Department as U.S. Ambassador at Large, directing the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons from 2007 to 2008. He also served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for International Organization Affairs. Mark Lagon is the co-editor of the recently published book, Human Dignity and the Future of Global Institutions. And Mark Lagon is no stranger to the VOA microphones. He was a regular panelist on our U.S. Foreign Policy Look Ahead show recorded at Georgetown University. Well, we'll be talking with Mark about Freedom House's 2015 Freedom in the World report, which talks about a waning of liberty around the world and an explosion of terrorist violence. Well, Mark Lagon, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you, as always.
Thanks for hosting us here at Freedom House. Well, Mark, first I want to congratulate you on a map, Freedom in the World 2015, in which you actually place Cape Verde on the map, a little small archipelago off the coast of West Africa, which most maps somehow don't deem worthy of placing on the map. But at any rate, I want to first congratulate you on that. And of course, it rates a free status, which is very, very good. Based on the Freedom in the World 2015 report, looks like 2014 saw an overall decline in political rights and civil liberties around the world. Your report concludes that democratic ideals are under the greatest threat in 25 years, and you ranked Syria at the bottom and cited violence in Ukraine. Talk a little bit about some of the highlights and obviously the lowlights, in a sense, of this report.
Well, our report has gradations of the degree to which countries are free, that they respect human rights, whether they have democracy in full, but even beyond elections, having pluralism. And we found that there's been backtracking on overall freedom in the world for 9 consecutive years. For 9 consecutive years, more countries have had a decline in their human rights than have had an improvement. So this year, for instance, there were 63 countries that had a decrease in human rights, whereas 33 went up. The big trends are a more brazen, old-fashioned, coercive form of repression, not just the subtleties of false democracy and bogus elections, but actually, you know, brutal repression of expression and dissent, and then terrorism as a source of a human rights abuse. We need to remember that not only should we be worried that counterterrorism not harm human rights, but in a very fundamental way, whether it's Boko Haram or ISIS, that terrorists are violating the most fundamental of human rights, including life.
Let's dig down deeper into these major trends. You talk about, you know, brutal tactics, overt, brazen violation of human rights. For some reason, Russia comes to my mind with respect to with respect to the illegal annexation of Crimea, its destabilization of Ukraine. Talk about some specific countries.
Well, you're right to raise Russia not only for its violation of sovereignty in Ukraine, and we're just about to put out a report with the Atlantic Council on how in Crimea human rights have been harmed markedly since that annexation, but at home in Russia, the treatment of journalists, treatment of those who are lesbian and gay represents pretty straightforward, direct rejection of democratic standards. Egypt, as General al-Sisi took power, has moved Egypt in a direction that would probably be best seen as more authoritarian and more restricted than even under Hosni Mubarak. Turkey, President Erdogan has taken things in the direction of squeezing independent media and ignoring the independent judiciary's role whatsoever. And of course, China has had a strong economic growth model, but without political and civil expression. Xi Jinping, as a leader, has been bent upon more centralization of personal power than anyone since Deng Xiaoping.
Mark Leghorn, why do you think this trend toward greater repression of the press and human rights is taking place?
Well, the question I ask myself is, how concerned or depressed should we be if you are hoping for the spread of freedom in the world? Is a more brazen form of authoritarian repression a sign of cockiness, of confidence on the part of autocratic leaders, or is it a white-knuckled grip that they're hanging on to power and that subtle forms of propaganda or bogus elections aren't working? I actually remain quite optimistic that despite this backward trend over the last 9 years, that there still hasn't been a massive backward wave in that democratization wave that was launched with the end of the Cold War, and that in fact civil society will be more innovative and demand change in ways that will be much more vital in the medium term and the long term than the ability of autocrats to hang on to power.
And certainly your organization, Freedom House, does a lot to inspire and probably give courage to these civil society groups. So let's go back and talk specifically about what Freedom House does specifically, the reports it issues, and your vision for the next years or while you're at the helm, what you're looking to emphasize specifically.
Well, Freedom House is famous for its reports. Those are the flagship. Not only the Freedom in the World report, but global reports on freedom of the press and freedom on the net. But in fact, the majority of what we do, the majority of the woman and man hours of our staff around the world are on helping civil society partners fight their own fight around the world for those rights that are often on paper but not realized by people. So whether it be in Kenya assisting people to assert their rights so that a minority group is not marginalized, or whether it is assisting women in the Middle East in a place like Jordan to assert their rights, we are there not taking on this fight as ours, but helping those who are citizens of their own societies, demand of their governments change.
Do you have offices in other parts of the world?
We do. Just some of the places that we have offices include Mexico City, Caracas, Venezuela, Vilnius, Lithuania, where I'm going to be visiting just in a few days, where we, you know, assist others from the region who are trying to bring about political change. We have offices in Jordan, South Africa. Just this morning, I was on the phone with our team in Mali.
And Mark, as president, of course, you can set the agenda to some extent in addition to the core work you do. Do you have a particular focus that you want to emphasize?
Well, I think that there are some traditions that I really want to carry on, and I want to make sure that we don't change. Holding up a hot white spotlight on the record of human rights of countries around the world, which is how we get the Freedom in the World report and a map that categorizes countries as free, partly free, and not free. I want to take that farther. We have a lot of information about trend lines since the 1970s about elements of political and civil liberties, and I'd like those to be even more accessible to the global public as an asset. As far as work on the ground, we need to work on some particularly important issues. Two I'd mention are freedom of expression, whether it be on the internet, journalists who are subject to violent intimidation or other forms of freedom of expression. That's a real niche for us, something we do well. And we, in fact, have increasingly been involved in emergency assistance to human rights defenders who are under pressure. The other thing I'm really eager to do is to take very good work that we do on female empowerment, on gender equality, and scale it up. I believe that when the majority of people, which women are in the world, are marginalized, be from property rights or political voice, that that is a calamitous situation and a waste of a big asset for prosperity and freedom in the world.
You wrote an opinion editorial recently in the Wall Street Journal in which you discussed how autocratic regimes exploit terrorism as a pretext for repression. So I want to talk about that.
Good.
You know, leaders in authoritarian or totalitarian regimes like Russia, China, Venezuela, or Syria, how they either silence, imprison, or worse, murder dissidents by falsely claiming these dissidents are terrorists. And you also mentioned that in some places, place these so-called terrorists in psychiatric wards, for example. I mean, basically trying to undermine and disguise, you know, the true nature, of what they're doing. How can and should the free world democracies respond to these cynical tactics?
I'm very glad you asked. A finding of our report is that terrorists cause human rights abuses, brutal ones. Remember, what's the definition of a terrorist? Someone who purposefully targets innocent civilians for harm. But dictatorships around the world, whether they be a number of so-called allies of the United States in the Middle East, or the Chinese, or the Russians, use the excuse of real terrorism existing to brand their enemies terrorists, whether it be the Maduro government in Venezuela that treats opposition like they're terrorists, or the Chinese. I'm really taken with the case of the Chinese targeting the Uyghur people, the Muslims of what China calls Xinjiang, East Turkestan. Not only are they using terrorism as an excuse for treating every person in Xinjiang as if they are violent extremists, but they are in fact repressing religious freedom, the ability of Muslims to practice their religion in the name of counterterrorism.
And again, does Freedom House recommend ways in which we can combat these tendencies, whether as individuals or countries, governments?
Well, it does help if the United States' own record of counterterrorism does not have blemishes. It's good if the U.S. policy on detainees or drones, you know, does not call into question the tactics of counterterrorism. That said, we in the NGO community need to point to those times that autocrats are putting forward a bogus argument that their political enemies are somehow terrorists.
Of course, so what comes to mind is Syria. You know, we have a regime that brands its opposition as terrorists. And I know that in the most recent report, you say that Syria has really gone downhill, is one of the worst rated countries in terms of freedom.
Well, atrocities have occurred in Syria, and the record of Assad is appalling. And any discussion of atrocities prevention by the civilized world is laughable in thinking about how little has been done to prevent atrocities in Syria. Unfortunately, nonviolent opposition to Assad has been overtaken and eclipsed by violent extremists, including ISIS. And freedom in the world looks society by society about where freedom is increasing and decreasing. And sometimes it's the government that's the source of the harm, and sometimes it's paramilitaries and terrorists. In the case of Syria, the public, the innocents of Syrian society are being squeezed from both sides.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Ambassador Mark Lagon. He's president of Freedom House, the oldest human rights organization in America. Mark is the co-editor of the recently published book, Human Dignity and the Future of Global Institutions. I'm your host, Carol Castiel, and we are coming to you from Freedom House headquarters in downtown Washington. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. You can send feedback via email to pcusa@voanews.com. Either way, tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Here's a shout out to a very faithful listener from Turkey, Ida İpek. Teşekkürler. Well, back to you, Mark Lagon. Let's pursue our conversation. And are there any bright spots in the world?
There are. And I think it's very important for us when we look at an overall trend of decline in freedom and be troubled by Egypt, Russia, China, Venezuela, and other places that we look at those bright spots. Tunisia is the most striking bright spot found in the report. So Our report has subtle levels of ratings from 1 to 7 on political rights and civil liberties, but we categorize countries as free, partly free, and not free. The only country in the Arab Middle East in the last 40 years that has been categorized as fully free has arisen this year in Tunisia. It had a progressive constitution put in place in January of 2014 and successively had good, clean, fair parliamentary and presidential elections. And as some people have been distraught that the so-called Arab Spring has not led to democratization or the spread of freedom on a steady path, the world community should focus on helping Tunisia be a success story.
Indeed. Of course, in contrast, we have countries like you mentioned earlier, Egypt, which has resorted to another tactic, police brutality, sham trials, severe prison sentences, and so forth, which, of course, is very disconcerting.
It is. You know, we've had 3 phases of trouble where under Mubarak, he presented the United States and the West with a false choice. You either back me and bankroll me massively, or you'll get the Muslim Brotherhood, preventing there being other moderate choices between those two. The Muslim Brotherhood, once they took power under Morsi, restricted any independent judiciary. And as a colleague of mine said, the Arab Spring meant a winter for women and women's rights. And now al-Sisi has taken things in a much more brazen and brutal way in terms of a grip on dissent.
Well, I guess just documenting that is an important step toward hopefully correcting it at some point.
And, you know, documentation is important. One thing we try and do is help local civil society organizations document human rights abuses. When the time comes of a transition for people to be held to account, to have that documented evidence so that there can be transitional justice can lay the groundwork for reconciliation and more durable democracy later.
Is there a website or a place where perhaps some of our listeners could turn to if they wanted more information about Freedom House and how it can help them?
Good. We'd welcome you to look up freedomhouse.org, Freedom House, all one word, .org. And there you'll find our reports, some texture of our programmatic work around the world.
Well, of course, you mentioned corruption, and we note that there is certainly a relationship between lack of freedom and the lack of human rights and corruption. There's also a relationship between the spike in terrorism and countries with widespread corruption, inept governance, and weak or non-existent democratic institutions. So to fight terrorism, isn't the long-term answer to tackle the root problem of inept governance, lack of democratic institutions? But at the same time, here we are in the United States and in the West in general, is sometimes either complicit with some of the regimes that are very corrupt or undemocratic. So what comes to mind, of course, is Nigeria, its security forces vis-a-vis Boko Haram.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming the Nigerian government necessarily, but many say that the government has exacerbated the problem by either heavy-handed tactics or corruption in the military, so the security forces aren't fighting as effectively as they could. There's lack of economic development in the north, which may have attracted some people to Boko Haram. And then, of course, we have the same thing vis-a-vis Syria, where presumably if the West perhaps had helped the peaceful, nonviolent opposition earlier on, or the army defectors, the proliferation of the jihadis backed now or backed previously at least by Saudi Arabia or Qatar may not have materialized. You also mentioned in one of your articles, I believe, the Shiite-led government in Iraq marginalized the Sunni tribes, and now a lot of them see the Shia militias and the Shia-led government perhaps as threatening as the so-called Islamic State. So how do we deal with these very deep problems that we help to create to some extent?
If you ask what the purpose and approach of Freedom House is, it is to focus on there being more democratic nations in the world, and not just elections, but accountable, trustworthy governments that produce for their people and treat everybody like they're a citizen in full. That's not just a matter of universal values and idealism. It's actually something that is very practical. Those are going to be stable states. Those are going to be states more likely to be prosperous, to deliver for people. We are very focused on those countries that are democracies in the world, whether they be in the West or whether they be rising democracies of the global South, like Brazil and India, stepping up and holding nations to account. If the democracies of the world are complicit in allowing countries to be autocratic, brutal in putting down opposition, or corrupt, it's a breeding ground for terrorism. And we're not doing anybody any favors by treating such countries as allies that should not be chided.
And then, of course, there's Russia. It seems like Vladimir Putin didn't get the memo that the Cold War is over. He, of course, invaded and annexed Crimea. We witnessed the recent assassination of opposition leader and Putin critic Boris Nemtsov, the constant destabilization of Ukraine, whereby Putin's Russia cynically denies involvement and blames either the West or the United States or the opposition, you know, for creating the very conditions that actually the Kremlin is most likely responsible for. He uses state-controlled media to broadcast propaganda, false narratives. Again, this points to democracies, Mark Legon. Why aren't democracies doing more to fight, for example, the propaganda war by Vladimir Putin to counter the narrative and not just condemn the invasion of Crimea or lament, you know, the murder of Boris Nemtsov, but actually, you know, put more money in action, you know, where their indignation is?
Well, you put your finger on a serious problem. Vladimir Putin, rather than responding to the West, has been the provocative actor. Some people say that a country like Ukraine talking to the EU and NATO about associating with them is provocative. What's provocative has been the actions of Putin to hold up his power, and when the economy of Russia has slid, to build up, to whip up support with nationalist goals. There is a very concerted, expensive effort by Putin to have a media campaign. And, you know, the West needs to think about countering that campaign. I'm about to visit Lithuania in a few days, and they're very concerned about their whole region being suffused with Russian state media. And this was a big problem in Ukraine. The whole narrative, bald lies about desires of Russian ethnic populations being unanimous and wanting to split off from Ukraine, was shaped by propaganda. We need to respond, and honestly, we need to not only rely on private sector media, but some things like public sector broadcasting.
And indeed, and I assume that that would be a much more cost-effective way to combat this type of provocation.
I'm a huge believer in bargains for foreign policy. You know, going to war and using the expensive tools of military violence are necessary, but they shouldn't be the first option. And programs to assist civil society organizations that are trying to push for more freedom, human rights, and democracy, those are a bargain. And broadcasting and public diplomacy programs that through exchanges or broadcasts or internet platforms make people have choices of objective information, these are bargains that can make for a freer world and a more stable one, and to grapple with Putin.
Correct. And perhaps, Mark Legon, you need to go up to Capitol Hill and talk to some of our members of Congress. At any rate, let me turn now.
I plan to be.
Okay. Let me turn now to an interesting proposal by Amnesty International. It has recently called on the UN Security Council, its five members, to give up their power of veto in cases where mass atrocities are being committed. Does Freedom House endorse this proposal? And what might be the chances of it even, you know, getting passed? What are the obstacles?
Well, I would modify the proposal of Amnesty International. I think that the permanent five members of the Council, the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China, should voluntarily not use their veto when a case of atrocities is going on. Russia has used its veto to prevent action on Syria. There are a number of cases where permanent five members have stood in the way. They should voluntarily set that aside. You know, that we have to fight over things, you know, and scratch away at the will of the Security Council is sad. But I will say, you know, there's more of a sense in the Security Council that humanitarian intervention is reasonable than there was several years ago. And if you just look at the Commission of Inquiry of the UN about atrocities that have been committed in North Korea, well, unsurprisingly, China and Russia blocked action on that. However, they allowed an agenda item on human rights in North Korea to be added to the Security Council's array of issues that it deals with. So, slow progress.
Well, speaking of North Korea, will nothing short of a major regime change unleash greater freedom or freedom, period, in that most reclusive and rogue regime?
Well, regime change has gotten a dirty name because it's associated with military intervention. And the United States, the West, the world community should not look to turn first or often to invasion to bring about change. But let's be clear. This is one of the most sadistic, harmful governments in the world. It needs to change. Hopefully North Koreans will bring about that change.
And finally, Mark Lagon, despite all the bad news that your organization documented in 2014, the rise in terrorism and dictatorship, you say that freedom's adversaries do not represent the wave of the future. What makes you so sure, and what can we all do collectively to make sure that, in fact, is the case?
We should get off the psychiatrist's couch. Those people who think that the dictatorships of the world have taken the playbook and the plan of civil society and social media and then reverse engineered it and taken cues to control civil society and social media, that's not going to last. The creativity, the will to be free, the desire for dignity, for everybody to be treated worthy of access to justice, that is going to overwhelm dictators, even those that seem to be the most entrenched, from China to Saudi Arabia.
Ambassador Mark Lagon is president of Freedom House. That's the first and longest standing human rights organization in the United States. Mark, thank you so much for your time and your terrific insights.
It's always a special pleasure to be on VOA.
And we wish you the best here at Freedom House. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Ted Schneider. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.